of Spingola Speaks. This is Deanna Spingola, and my guest this hour is Jack Abramoff. He is the author of Capital Punishment, The Hard Truth About Corruption from America's Most Notorious Lobbyist. His website is abramoff.com. At the age of 12, he decided to become a devout Orthodox Jew. This was after watching the movie. What was that movie? Jack, are you there?
I am. Well, in part after watching Fiddler on the Roof,
there was
some other things as well. Right.
Now, they've made two films about you. Both came out in 2010. Casino Jack and the United States of Money, released in May 2010. And the other film was Casino Jack, which was released in December of 2010. And I started writing about you back in 2005, and I made a lot of notes about you. I didn't publish everything that I wrote, but I was digging into my notes. And back in 2005, I started writing for News with Views. And you mentioned in your book about Rabbi Daniel Lapin. Is that how you pronounce it, Lapin, or is it Lapin?
Lapin, actually.
Lapin, okay. And he currently writes articles for News with Views, so it's kind of a small world. And one of the things that I wrote about you, I said, Jack Abramoff became a Washington lobbyist after the Republicans won control of the House in 1994. However, he didn't just suddenly appear on the Washington scene. Abramoff will serve the typical minimum of jail time despite years of criminal activity, which includes illegally pocketing millions in lobbying fees, evading taxes on his own ill-gotten gains, provided trips, meals to elected officials in exchange for favors, swindled tens of millions of dollars from certain Indian tribes. And then it gets worse.
Okay.
I was reading the reviews of your book, and I found it interesting that some of the reviews came out basically the day that the book came out. And some people are very mad at you. I've listened to some of the other interviews you've done, and people are really mad at you.
Well, I think some people are. Some people are. I think it breaks down into a few categories. There are some people who are upset that I'm speaking about the lobbying world and what's going on inside, and frankly, that I've kind of switched sides, I guess, in a certain respect, and am trying to do what I can to use the knowledge I have to maybe make some changes or help others make some changes. There are some people who feel that, very few, actually, that I've encountered, who still are bearing grudges and are upset about past stuff, even though I've been punished for it, apologized for it, I'm working to make recompense for it. And, there are some people who just, will hold on to that. And at some point, all I can continue to do is apologize and just try to do my best to not be the person that I was and try to make recompense and pay my restitution and all the rest. And I think those are the two groups. There might be someone else out there, I guess, who feel that I'm somehow resurrecting myself, if that's possible, by coming out and talking about these things. And, I think my attitude is, look, it could be much easier for me, it would be much easier for me to just kind of go away and hide and, go work and earn some money and, raise my family and do the rest. But I know some things about what goes on in there, and I was involved in them. And unfortunately, sometimes I was at the tip of the spear of them. And I want to use that knowledge to be positive and do something good.
Okay, we do have to take a 3-minute break. We will be right back with our guest this hour, Jack Abramoff. Stay tuned.
Hi, my name is David Stovenel, and I host a talk radio show called Operation Restore Christian America. To listen online, go to genuinechristianitynow.com, then click on the Listen Live button every Saturday at 10 a.m. Central Time. My primary focus is that the Protestant Freemason British Royal Windsor family is now apostate and making their final all-out attack worldwide in an attempt to force us to accept their satanic New World Order. I offer remedies of how to stop them. The British monarchy has totally abandoned their ancestors' genuine Christian faith and have returned to their effort to conquer the world through the sovereign's will, hidden laws, violence, terror, and deceit. Remember, to listen online, go to genuinechristianitynow.com, then click on the Listen Live button every Saturday at 10 a.m. Central Time.
Survival of the fittest. In any and all situations, survival is your number one priority. That requires being tough and thinking smart. And the folks at Freeze Dry Guy are going to help you do just that. They have the long-range patrol ration entrees, what they call the brick pack. When you're in survival mode, it is absolutely the best item for your survival pack or bug-out bag. You can go farther, faster, and carry more food with the LRP cold weather ration entrees. Not only do these long-lasting, durable entrees help sustain you or your family through the harshest environment or situation, they are by far the most delicious of their kind. No contest. With a variety of tasty entrees, you can't beat the LRP brick packs. Let Freeze Dry Guy help you in your survival situations. Go to freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-FOOD.
If you're the mother of a child with behavior problems, I'd like to talk to you. My name is Janet Lehman. I'm a behavioral therapist and a mom. I know what it's like when the child you love becomes a defiant, out-of-control child who disrespects you. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the program that tens of thousands of moms are now using to turn around their child's behavior. If you've heard about the Total Transformation and wondered if it will work for you, now you can try it for free. I'm willing to give away 1,000 programs today for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. We'll let you keep it for free. I know the Total Transformation works because I used these techniques with my own son and with troubled kids for over 30 years. Let me prove to you that it works by giving you the program for free.
Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
And our guest this hour is Jack Abramoff. And you have done a lot of very interesting things after you graduated from Brandeis. Grover Norquist managed your campaign for the chairmanship of the College Republican National Committee. And you, in that capacity, you said in 1983, it is not our job to seek peaceful coexistence with the left. Our job is to remove them from power permanently. And later, the person that you were running against, Amy Moritz, then was the founding director of the National Center for Public Policy Research. You funded several of her trips. And I find it interesting that the people that you interacted with early on, and I said in my first paragraph that you didn't just arrive in Washington as a lobbyist, but you had been there for some time. You had a pro-Reagan group, that, and you also helped Oliver North build support for the Nicaraguan Contras. You served on many. You've done a lot of things. You were in Hollywood making a movie. So tell us about some of the things that you've been involved with, and then tell us about your first job as a lobbyist.
Well, I was active from the time I was in college, as you mentioned, in Republican Party politics. Actually, Amy didn't run against me. She wound up working for me on the staff of the College Republicans. I ran unopposed when I ran for College Republican chairman the first time. Second time, I ran against a fellow from Texas. And But I was involved, you know, with a lot of the folks who later came to head other organizations. Grover Norquist is one of them. Ralph Reed, who headed the Christian Coalition with Pat Robertson for a while. And, you know, I was a youth political activist from the time I went to college. and became national chairman of College Republicans and moved on to head President Reagan's grassroots lobby on Capitol Hill, and basically had a very full active life there.
Right. And when you were first asked about being a lobbyist, somebody invited you to be a lobbyist. What was your concerns then, and what did you think about that kind of activity in Washington?
Yeah, I had a very negative view of lobbyists and lobbying because I thought that they were the special interest, and indeed they were. Unfortunately for me, I was enticed to become involved. Mainly in those days, the discussion revolved around the fact that the firm that wanted to hire me was working to, quote, get the government off the backs of Microsoft. They were Bill Gates' father's firm, and their primary portfolio was as Microsoft's lobbyist. They did other things, too, but that kind of broke down my stereotype in my mind, at least, of what lobbyists were. I didn't really know a lot about them. I didn't have a lot of interaction when I was political activist, other than the fact that I knew that they wouldn't fund our various political efforts, notwithstanding the fact that they were supposed to be very pro-free market and the rest. So that was a source of frustration. But that was my first involvement. I joined the firm, was called Preston Gates at the time, and built a lobbying practice once I arrived.
Okay. What other corporations did you work for, or what other governments?
Yeah, I worked for a lot of Indian tribal governments. I worked for the government of the Northern Marianas Islands, which is a U.S. territory. I worked for the judiciary in Guam. I worked for indirectly for the government of Malaysia. I worked for corporations. I worked for Tyco Corporation, which is a conglomerate of companies that are focused in defense and security. I worked for a company called Prime Media, which owned something called Channel One at that time, which was a television network for the high schools. I worked for Court TV earlier. We were trying to get court cameras in the federal courtrooms, and a variety of other companies. Those are the ones that come to mind.
Okay. Now, you came into the lobbying industry at about the same time that they passed NAFTA. Did you have anything to do with the immigration policies in representing the various companies that you worked for, the various corporations, and NAFTA?
NAFTA I never worked on. I think NAFTA, I can't remember when it was approved, but I'm pretty sure it was approved before I became a lobbyist.
Formally signed on December 17th, 1992, under President George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, I only became a lobbyist at the end of 94. I joined Preston Gates. So I didn't work on NAFTA. We worked a little bit on, I think they were called H-1 visas. Are those the visas for people who are so-called skilled workers and that kind of thing?
Yes.
I remember there was some of that during the Microsoft time. I didn't myself work on immigration really at all.
But you did help the Marianas.
Marianas. I'm sorry. Yes, the Marianas Islands had one of their major issues was immigration as it relates to them. It wasn't general immigration to the U.S. It was immigration into the Marianas.
Okay, the situation with that country.
That's the United States. It's not a separate country, right?
Okay, but wasn't. The whole point was cheap labor, and
what it was is this: the Marianas, the islands, the 13 islands of the Marianas, like Guam, are located out in the Western Pacific, and they were, like Guam, attacked by the Japanese during World War II.
Right,
and they were liberated. They were actually previous to the Japanese control, and the Japanese actually administered them a little while there before the war. But previous to that, they were under German control and Spanish control and the rest. After World War II, like those islands, like the Marshalls and Palau and Federated States of Micronesia, they were put under the trusteeship of the United States. Now, in the 70s, these islands, all of them, were given a choice. You can join the United States, or you can become freely associated, or you can become completely independent. The Marianas chose to join the United States. They're very patriotic, pro-American folks out there, and they chose to join the United States, and they chose to cede the control of all their islands and all of the seabeds around their islands 200 miles around 13 islands out there to the United States in exchange for policies that would enable them to have economic viability in Asia because they're in the Asian economy.
Mm-hmm.
And two of them were that, A, they'd be able to control their minimum wage locally because they couldn't compete with the U.S. minimum wage, with the economies of Asia having wages that are, you know, obviously $1 a day, whatever it was. So they set a somewhat lower minimum wage than we had here. And number two, they had to be able to control the immigration into their island, both from a tourism point of view and from the point of view of being able to bring workers in, because they had a certain amount of people on the island, and that was basically it. So those two things were among the very important things they bargained for and were given by the United States, and they ceded control of their islands. Now, fast forward to the 1990s, the Clinton administration and the Congress were decided, because the efforts of the labor's union, particularly the former ladies' garment workers' union, called Unite now, that this these advantages, so-called, would be taken away. And they started to abrogate them, and then the Marianas hired a different lobbying firm first, and things kept going, and then eventually they came to hire me, and I and my team stopped it.
Okay. I understand that you had between $80 and $100 million to pass out among Congress.
Well, I'm not sure where you got that figure, but we raised probably a lot less than that. It was several million a year that I raised. You may be thinking of the figure of the amount of money we were paid ultimately in fees over 10 years. That I think, is that figure. But we raised every year from our clients millions of dollars. We very much were in the middle of the system of bribery that unfortunately exists in Washington. And we not only raised the money and gave it to them, but we also bought meals and took them on golfing trips and bought them tickets to sporting events and all the rest, and in great excess. And that was part of the reason that I, you know, appropriately was taken down and unfortunately had to spend time in a prison.
Okay. Now, when you would take a, say, for instance, you weren't allowed to just hand a check over to a congressman. So what did you do in order to convey money to Congress people?
Well, sadly, you are allowed to just hand a check over to congressmen. It's called a campaign contribution, and it's the polite way that Washington gets around calling it bribery.
Okay, so basically
really
you say that you're raising funds. What if they're not running for anything at that time, and you take them out to lunch and you want to buy a favor? You want them to vote a certain way on a bill. How do you manage to give them money to have them do that?
That's a good question, and I'm going to tell you. But let me first tell you, there's none of them who aren't running for something. They're always running, okay? Even if their election is 6 years away, like some of these senators, they're running, and they're raising money. So there's not a day that I remember any of them weren't trying to raise money. But what you do, the way the laws are written, which is really unfortunate, is that they ban a lobbyist from taking a legislator or a staffer to a meal. You can't buy them a meal. But if you declare that meal a fundraiser, you can go ahead and give them that meal, and you can take out of your pocket a bunch of checks and give them the checks too, and have the same interaction that you otherwise would have had. And that's one of the many loopholes that are in the law of the gift ban in Washington, and it's perfectly legal, and it's something that has to be changed.
Yeah, because legal isn't always moral.
Oh, absolutely. You can be completely contemptible and completely legal at the same time in Washington. There are very few, by the way, who step over the lines, which is, unfortunately, I was one of them, because you don't need to step over the lines. The lines are written in a way that makes it it's completely contemptible.
All righty. We are going to a three-minute break. We will be right back with our guest, Jack Abramoff, after a word from our sponsors.
Is constantly fighting off the invaders in the way of bacteria, viruses, pathogens, and so forth. The colder weather is a winter wonderland for these guys. What you need to do all the time, but more so during this season, is to strengthen your immune system. And you can do it with Daniel Chapter 1's A and B Biotropins. Acidophilus and Bifidus from frozen human strain is your frontline defense to the invaders. For years, Daniel Chapter 1's customers have been using A and B Biotropins. They've found that they are so effective, it's common for them to do them regularly to keep their immune systems in tip-top shape. Protect yourself with A&B Biotropins. Call 800-504-5511. That's 800-504-5511. For a discount, use promo code 200A. That's promo code 200A.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcasts, as well as a contest corner where we'll raffle different prizes to our listeners. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
This hour is Jack, excuse me, Jack Abramoff, and his website is abramoff.com. Now, you said that that you went a little over and above in your lobbying efforts, and didn't you also have some sort of in with the Secretary of the Interior, Gail A. Norton?
We were close to her deputy secretary, a guy named Steve Briles, who unfortunately also wound up going to prison on this case. That was pretty much our tie-in there. I met her a couple times, but we really weren't close to her personally. We didn't really need to be, frankly, with our ties to her the rest of her staff.
Like Italia Federici?
Yeah, she was not on the staff, though. She was a head of a separate organization, and she also, unfortunately, wound up playing in the case.
Really? Yeah. Now, you didn't serve very long.
I didn't serve very long, you say?
Well,
I was there for 1,299 nights. It seemed long to me. I don't know if you've ever been to prison, but
No, I never have.
Yeah, if you had, you would never think that that's not a long time.
Well, in my first, when I was putting together my notes, I mean, the things that you did affected a lot of people. It impacted a lot of lives. You took a lot of money. You did some pretty egregious things, and yet you, I know people who smoke pot that get longer sentences.
Well, I don't think people who smoke pot should be getting any sentences, by the way.
I don't either.
And I think that the nation definitely has an incarceration issue, putting people away for a long time. But maybe it'd be useful to sort of unpack what I did and versus what was reported in the press. And Because, you know, a lot of what happened with me was I didn't speak out when this started. I kind of kept my own counsel and just, frankly, tried to weather it at first. You know, when it first started, to be honest with you, I thought, well, you know, what, this will blow over. This is America. Hey, everybody's ADD, right? And sure. things will blow over and we'll just get through this. And then the next sort of phase of my emotional approach to this was, well, why are they picking on me? I mean, after all, did I really do anything very different than what's going on here? Maybe I did more of it, but is it really different? And that gave way eventually to kind of an anger of, gee, you know, what's this all about? And finally, I frankly sat down and took a look at my emails and took a look at an honest look at my life and the fact I was in a business that really I should never have been in to begin with, and started going through things and realized, you know what, I did cross the line in certain areas. I did do things I shouldn't have done. I didn't set out to do them. I didn't set out to break the law. I didn't set out certainly to hurt anybody, but I did. You know, I did break the law, and that was a problem. And so I decided to, frankly, to cooperate and to get through it, you know, and as best I could. That's not generally what people do. People try to resist and fight. In fact, I was in prison with a lot of people who still resist and wouldn't admit what they did, but I did. Now, in the course of that, I started to rethink not only who I was and what I did, but the system itself, and so that's sort of what led me to write the book. But looking at what I actually did, what I pled to, and what was, in fact, the problem, stripped away from all the media hype and all the blame that was, you know, and in essence, I really got blamed for crazy things. I got blamed by certain newspapers in Louisiana for Katrina, for Hurricane Katrina. Now, I was a good lobbyist, but I wasn't that good, all right, that I'd be able to cause Katrina or cause any of the difficulties there with Katrina.
Okay.
And so basically what I pled to was I pled to not informing my tribal clients of the fact that I was getting part of the profit from companies that I brought to them to do work for them outside of Washington, which I participated in, to help them to save their markets. That was number one. That's what I pled to. The fact is that I benefited my clients to the tune of about, for good or for bad, by the way. I mean, I'm not saying that I should have been in the business, but looking at the facts, to the tune of about $6 billion for fees that were in the range of north of about $80 million, that figure used earlier. Now, that's considered a pretty good investment. Not that I ripped them off, not that I hoodwinked them, but I worked very hard for them. Now, I did do something wrong, which I pled to, which was not informing them about the fact that I received that profit. And that was not my right to do, and I got punished for it. Number two, I pled guilty to tax evasion because what I did was my wife and I gave about 80% of the money I made to charity, all right, charity and communal causes. Unfortunately, what I also did was sometimes when a company wanted to pay me, I told them, don't pay me, just pay the charity. Just give the money directly. And by doing that, unfortunately, I evaded taxes, and I paid for that. And number three, the sort of stream of ongoing goods and services and favors that I did for congressmen and public servants to help my clients, that I wound up paying for as well. Now, I got to tell you, I was accused of every manner of perfidy in the world, but I don't know that deserving more than 1,299 nights in prison for what I just described to you is fair. I did do the time I was given. I went there. I served it. It was miserable. Every second of prison is miserable, and I don't want others to be in prison, and certainly not people in these drug offenses. But I can't see how people can say possibly, unless they've been to prison, that the length of time in prison was somehow inadequate.
Okay. We're going to a break. We will be right back in 3 minutes, and we'll pick it up on the other side of the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
As business becomes more difficult, control of cash and the ability to borrow becomes critical.
Working capital cash is your greatest insurance and guarantee of financial stability in these uncertain times. Equipment leasing allows you to obtain the income-producing equipment that your business needs and pay for it with tax-free, ever-devaluing dollars. Money that you've already earned and paid taxes on should be sparingly used. That is your reserve capital, safety net. We are also able to buy and lease back equipment that you already own and have depreciated, thereby making more cash available for your present-day needs. For a complete, comprehensive explanation as to how this financial truth will benefit your business future, call Bob New Incorporated at 888-639-2621. 888-639-2621. Keep your working capital cash reserves and borrowing capability. 888-639-2621.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
Do you ever find yourself in this situation? You're in your local health store looking for a remedy, and there are 20 different brands claiming to do the same thing. Well, it's time to stop worrying that it's a hopeless search. Fact is, every day we are exposed to an environmental medium that has become full of toxins. The only thing you can do to defend yourself is to find the solution. At TerraVim, we focus on carrying only the highest quality natural supplements. We understand it's a difficult task to filter through the multitude of options to find your divine source of immortality, your golden apple. That's why we have made available to you products that are at the top of their game. Natural vitamins and supplements your body understands how to utilize. Visit our website at terravim.com. That's TerraVim.com to find what you've always been looking for, the solution. TerraVim, the best supplements on earth.
Author of Capital Punishment, The Hard Truth About Corruption from America's Most Notorious Lobbyist. And his website is Abramoff.com. Excuse me. Now, you were talking about the things that you did. And do you think that you deserved to be incarcerated?
Well, unfortunately, you know, I think I've got, it's a tough question. And the answer is ultimately yes, because I did break the law. I have a problem with the whole incarceration system in America. I think we just over-incarcerate. I was in prison with guys who were there for, you know, for decades for marijuana, things like that. It's just silly, nonviolent people. And what happens is you put folks in jail who are nonviolent. The families are the ones who really get hurt, the kids. And you see in those cases a culture develop where the father's missing from the family. And sometimes, by the way, the mother's missing from the family, too,
sure.
based on these things. And I understand they committed crimes. I get that. But what happens is the kids wind up basically in the same boat after time. And it's just got to be another way. And I'm not saying that people who break the law, including me, by the way, should get off and just skate away. And I didn't skate away, but there's got to be a smarter way to do this in general.
Now, we know, of course, that the prisons are privatized, corporations own them, and
well,
and
they make money. A few federal prisons. There are two federal prisons that are privatized, and I don't think that is I'm a free marketeer, but in that one area, I think it's a very bad idea for a lot of reasons.
Oh, absolutely. Now, what happened to your little black book that John McCain took from you?
My black book?
Didn't you have a little black book that had the number, the members of Congress that that accepted bribes from you?
No, I had 850,000 emails that detailed everything I did, and the Justice Department got them and read every one of them, and the FBI investigated them, and they went out to prosecute people who were clearly in violation of the law. The problem is that 99% of what I did was completely legal, okay? And so people can't be prosecuted for things that are legal. And also you have the speech and debate clause, which impedes any prosecution of members of Congress substantially. You have somebody like Bill Jefferson, who's sitting in prison right now for the $90,000 in his freezer. Well, that freezer was in his office. He would have been, he'd be enjoying the money right now. And so that's what goes on. So they were impeded with some of the congressmen.
Oh, my goodness. So that's how that happened.
Yep. That's right.
He just had it in the wrong place.
Yeah, he should have thought to put it in the office freezer if he had such
right.
a thing.
Right. Now, you brought up in your book about the amendment that that was, well, it wasn't actually passed. It wasn't ratified by all the states. But you talk about the popular election of senators, and
right.
Which has led to a lot of corruption in
right.
Washington. And, you know, these people are really taking bribes. They are representing the corporations. They are not in any way, shape, or form representing the people who supposedly put them there.
Well, in fact, you're referring, of course, to the 17th Amendment, and that has had an even more pernicious effect, because if you remember, the purpose of the election by the state legislatures of their senators was to give a balance so that the federal government couldn't usurp the powers that are delegated to the states. The states would always have a veto because they'd have their senator sitting in there. And when they took that away from the states, they created this body that you correctly pointed out is immensely corrupt, because every time they run for Senate, the campaigns now are so expensive. They're like mini presidential campaigns. And where do you think all that money's coming from? They're coming from the very powerful special interests, and they're coming from the labor unions and others who have their nose in there. And so what they did was actually create far more corruption by doing that than they alleviated.
Right, because, I mean, lobbyists have been around since 1830 or before that, and they just, but...
Well,
that,
lobbyists have been around since the Garden of Eden. They used to crawl around on the belly, but, you know, it's, I mean, lobbying is basically, you know, look, lobbying is not bad. It's not bad to petition the government. It's not bad to go tell the government what we want. The problem is where money is brought into the process, and where money is makes the playing field uneven, like I used to do as a lobbyist. That's the problem.
Okay. And we know that a lot of congressmen accepted bribes. Do you want to talk about any of that?
Well, I think what is very important, I think, for people to understand how it works now, because it's not like people walk in the door and hand a sack of cash over to somebody and say, okay, here you go, buddy, make sure you're over there for my vote tomorrow. They don't do it like that. That's the old days. When Lyndon Johnson used to have a shoebox, he'd have to put money, $100,000 sometimes, into the shoebox before he even talked to you. They don't do that anymore. What they do now is you walk in there and you're in a suit and tie, and you hand the congressman an envelope with checks from a fundraiser and say, gee, here it is. This is completely legal, and here you go. And by the way, I have an important issue next week. And they've dressed up the bribery in a way that is polite. And they don't like it when I talk about it, that I call it bribery. They attack me like crazy right now for doing that, and I don't know what I'm talking about, and that's not at all what they feel. The truth is most of them don't feel like they are being bribed. It's become so commonplace there that they feel that what they're doing is right. And unfortunately, any time you give a public servant something of financial value and you're asking something from that public servant, what is that other than a bribe?
Who are some of the people that took bribes from you that are still...
Everybody listed on my FEC reports, and there were hundreds and hundreds of them, every member of Congress, everybody who accepted money to do something for us, did something for our lobbying firm. These are the people who, unfortunately, are immersed in this system. And so it's not a question of who did. It's a question of who didn't. And, I mean, one of them, I got to tell you, and I don't support anybody for president or anything like that, but one of them was Ron Paul. He was somebody who lobbyists knew that you just weren't going to go in there and talk to him. He wasn't interested. And so that was one of the guys.
That's amazing. And that's the only one you can think of that didn't?
Well, there were others. I don't want to say there weren't others. Dana Rohrabacher from California had no interest in the finances of Congress. He raised money, but it didn't affect him, I think, at all. There were others, too. But the problem is the system. And what I try to do is get people focused not on the individuals, because the truth is there are going to be individuals every year going back decades and going forward decades. What we got to focus on is the system, so there aren't people in 5 years from now. We can't name anybody in a few years. That's the goal.
Okay, but, you know, I mean, the United States basically is a corporation, and the corporations are really, really so tightly, it's an incestuous relationship between the corporations and the government, and there is absolutely no evidence that they represent the best interest of the people at all. I mean, I had somebody on in the first hour that was talking about chemtrails and weather modification. And, I mean, that's a very dangerous thing. It's health-wise, and in fact, I mean, it's ruining the soil. It's doing all kinds of things. And you have Monsanto, who is buying up congressmen left and right, and to try to get genetically modified food, you know, as the prime seed. And that goes back to Bill Gates, who owns part of Monsanto. And, so I find that this tie to Monsanto, to Bill Gates, to the first firm that you worked for in Washington, very interesting.
Well, I think you're putting your finger on it, that money, unfortunately, is speaking a lot louder than the average citizen in our country. And it's not just corporate money, it's labor union money, it's individual money. Again, I don't have anything personally against people giving money. What I have against is people giving money and then wanting something back, whether it's a rule change like you described, or whether it's special tax breaks, or whether it's getting a grant or a loan or like Solyndra or whatever it is. All of that to me is in the same category. And that's all of that has got to be cut out.
And how would you recommend that that be done?
Well, what I'm encouraging the reform groups to do is to come together. There are groups out there who do want to do this, want to change the system, but they're very divided, and they've got to come together on something that both the left and the right can agree to. And I think that the removal of special interest money, as we're discussing, from politics is something that's consistent both on the left and on the right. And what I strongly am encouraging them to do is to draft legislation that's very precise, that removes this money from the politics and also closes the revolving door in Washington. You know how these congressmen and senators and their staff serve in the Congress and the Senate, and then they kind of become lobbyists or they other folks who are in the influence industry. Sometimes they call themselves history professors and other things like that. But
sure.
but to ban that, and to, frankly, to put term limits on them so they can't be there forever, because that's a source of immense corruption. And
Of course, you're talking about people who draft the laws. How is the average person going to get these people who are benefiting from their corporate association to draft laws that basically would affect their lifestyle?
Well, let me finish. What I tell them, I tell them that the groups, have got to draft this law, not the Congress. Because every time it comes from Capitol Hill, it's full of loopholes, and it's silly, okay, and they stop it. But the groups need to draft it. Then after it's in perfect form, to go on the left and the right to congressmen and candidates for Congress and demand in these districts that these people sign a pledge that within 30 days of arrival in the Congress, they will co-sponsor this bill. They will vote for this bill without amendment. They will oppose every amendment and every way to slow it down. And I know all the tricks, so we're going to list them all in there. And basically, they will vote it onto the floor through a discharge petition if the leadership hasn't permitted its approval within 60 days. And then they will vote for it in conference and get it through. and that both in the House and the Senate, and members who sign this and candidates who sign this will also sign on that same pledge that if they don't do any of these things, they will resign their office and not run again. Now,
well, of course they lie when they're campaigning.
Hold on. So obviously we have people who lie. All right, we know that. They lie in their campaigns. But what this will do is then give some ammunition to their opponents, give them a leg up. And finally, what I'm encouraging is the right and the left, people who care about this, to come together and agree that anybody who breaks their pledge or doesn't sign, that the money come together for the good purpose of taking them out of office and going and fighting them in their campaigns. Only if we take out some of these members of Congress where they lose their seats will the others get smart enough to wake up and realize that the party is over, the perks are over, and they've got to have to change these laws. And if not, they too will be voted out of office. Until that happens, nothing will change in Washington.
All righty. We do take callers on this program, and we do have some callers lining up. Let's take Mark in Philadelphia. Mark, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Deanna.
Good morning.
I really, really love your show, Deanna, because you never fail to, right when I start to get comfortable, you rearrange the furniture in my head and make me think again. I really love you for that.
Well, thank you.
Now, on this subject, I appreciate that Mr. Abramoff has come on your show. I cannot believe it. I'm really actually shocked. But what I'd like to say is we live in a culture now where the gamers are gaming the gamers are gaming the gamers. And yes, Mr. Abramoff, you may not have broken the law in some ways, but really you broke the spirit of the law. And I'm really shocked by that, because that you would say that you try to say that you'd really break any laws. You broke the spirit of the law.
Well, let me interrupt you for a second. I never said that. I absolutely broke the law, and I broke the spirit of the law. And for both of those things, I was certainly rightfully punished. Absolutely.
Now, the other thing is, I understand that you come from your family is in a restaurant background. Is that correct?
No, just myself. I opened the restaurants in D.C. My family's never been in the restaurants.
Okay, I grew up in the restaurant business. Now, part of being in the restaurant business is you actually have to love the people of the community that you serve. If you don't, your heart's not in the business, because the margins in the restaurant business, unless you're an elite clientele, which you probably were being that you're in Washington, the profitability is not there, and it's a lot of hard work. So you really have to, you're in it for more than just the money. You're in it for the love of the people, which really kind of goes against what I feel about you. Now it seems like it's like you're in the lounge on the Titanic, crooning as the ship is sinking, seeking to gain attention to yourself. Now, I watched your speech at the Harvard, I saw it on television, the Harvard speech you gave. And I saw that little smirk on your face, and that's what troubles me. Now you're seeking to gain notoriety for this. Unless you really, really want to revamp the whole system, which I don't think one individual can, I question the premise upon which you stand, and it brings up somebody that came from our past. I think his last name was Arnold. And so, sir, my perspective of you is that you're a traitor, because you knew the system, you knew the inner workings of it, and you participated in it for your gain and the gain of others, and you knew what you were up to. You gamed the system, you gamed the system, you gamed the system. This is what ruins the internet for a lot of people. There's a lot of opportunity on the internet, but there's a lot of people that are actually taking advantage of people and by gaming the system. But you know, they don't break the law, but they break the spirit of the law, and they break the spirit of trust. And that's why I called in. I really got stirred up, because this is about trust. Our nation is supposed to be built on trust. And who do we trust? We have to trust ourselves, because we sure look ahead can't trust those people in that 10-mile square of swampland criminals. Okay? And so I don't know you're bringing notoriety to yourself, and I feel that's how I feel about it. And I didn't. And by the way, I saw that you were sharply dressed on the program in the Harvard interview, the Harvard talk that you gave. You're sharply dressed, so I don't think you're really hurting. I think what should happen to you is you should be stripped of everything, because you violated. You're in the inner sanctums of this great nation, inner sanctums, and you know what's going on.
Okay, so, Mark, let's let Jack answer your questions here.
Well, I don't know I don't know what his questions were. I mean, he made a speech, and you know, I mean, I disagree with most of what he said, but you know, we live in a country where you can say what you want. I just don't think he, you know, I'm sharply dressed because I was wearing a suit that I bought at some department store. I mean, what was I supposed to show up at the speech with, a t-shirt? I mean, I don't know what quite to say to a fellow like that. So he made a speech, and you know, what can we say?
Wait, what you remind me of? You remind me of attorneys that are in the system that know that are actually violating.
Okay, Mark, we do have to go to a break. Thank you for your call. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcasts, as well as a contest corner where we'll raffle different prizes to our listeners. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Sure, there are winter specials, and then there are super winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Battle through this cold and flu season with powerful, natural, and safe flu fighters like Elderberry Power, Orgicillin, Olive Leaf Capsules, Grapefruit Seed Extract, and Respir 8, all specially priced during the winter sale at HerbalHealer.com. Don't forget Vitamin D3 this winter. Right now, HerbalHealer.com has 120 soft gels, 1,000 IUs, sale priced at only $9. We also have a super winter special on 6 homeopathic liquid detoxes: whole body detox, liver detox, kidney detox, lymph detox, brain detox, and lung detox. All liquid detoxes, regularly $26.95, are now just $20. HerbalHealer.com. As always, new customers get a free 128-page catalog with your order. Log on now and save big when you hit the winter specials at HerbalHealer.com. Healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Welcome back. Our guest this hour has been Jack Abramoff. He is the author of Capital Punishment, The Hard Truth About Corruption from America's Most Notorious Lobbyist. And the website is abramoff.com. And I believe that Mark expressed his anger. I believe that a lot of people in America are very angry at the government, at the government's relationship with the corporations, and you represented some of those corporations and contributed to the corruption in Washington. And of course, you didn't do this by yourself. You're one of many lobbyists who have worked on K Street. I don't know how many lobbyist firms there are. And as you mentioned, there's a revolving door where you go from Congress and you go right into working for a lobbyist or working for a lawyer's firm. And people are really mad.
No, they should be mad. I mean, this is the reason we have problems in our country. I'm ashamed of the fact that I was involved in it. I wish to God I could unring the bell. I can't. I'd love to be able to sit here and kind of palliate my situation and say that, well, I realized it in the middle of it and I tried to undo it. I didn't. In fact, worse, I know what it says about me. It says that I need to, and I'm trying to improve myself. But worse, if I wasn't taken down, I'd probably still be there. That's the biggest problem. And I'm trying to stress to folks, they don't, I guess, understand. You know, people outside of Washington, they intuitively get all this stuff pretty fast. They get it. They understand that it's bribery. They understand it's wrong. They understand it's the reason we're having problems in the country. People in Washington don't see this at all. Okay? There may be a few do, but very many don't. I didn't. And you think what you're doing is not only normal, but it's right, and it's good, and it's everything is fine. And frankly, if I wasn't kicked to the curb and laying there bleeding, I never probably would have spent the time to even think about it, as I didn't when I was there. That's
all
the
right.
problem.
We do have another caller. Let's take Shelley real quick in Texas. Shelley, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna.
Hi.
I did. You know how much I love your program. I contributed yesterday, and can't wait to get the PDF.
I sent it.
Oh, well, thank you. I haven't checked my email yet today, but I appreciate it. I agree, by the way, almost 100% with the previous caller, Mark. Everything he said, and I believe that perhaps you stated that you were an Orthodox Jew, Jack. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
I honestly think that if you had been any other religion, that you would have gotten off. You would not have gotten off lightly. I really think that you got away by pleading the Jewish mea culpa. And
what's the Jewish mea culpa? I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Well,
what you mean.
Look at the like Enron's Andy Fastow, Michael Milken, Mark Rich. There's so many other.
Well, I mean,
Jewish
this is. This, I think
that,
I think these are anti-Semitic
the
canards. This is just not a.
Getting,
this is not a serious call. I mean, you're are you saying the only
to,
people in America who break the law are Jews? Is that what you're saying?
Of course not.
Okay, I don't understand what you're saying. I didn't do these things because I'm Jewish.
The Talmud.
Oh, have you read the Talmud?
Steal.
Have you read the Talmud?
Okay. Have you?
I read it every day, my friend. Every day I study it. Yes.
All right, we've run out of time. I'm sorry. Thank you so much, Jack, for being on the program. And thank you, callers. And we will talk to you tomorrow, listeners.